Well, everybody, welcome to episode 324 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it's brought by our good friends at Legacy Realty of Iowa and Revive Dermatology Clinic and Spa. When it comes to real estate, experience matters. At Legacy Realty, we pride ourselves on having one of the largest and most experienced teams in Ankeny with over 75 agents strong. As one of the top brokerages in the metro, our local agents bring unparalleled knowledge of the market to help you make the best decisions for your home sale or purchase. Whether you're buying your first home, upgrading, or looking to sell, our team is ready to provide expert guidance every step of the way. Backed by the national strength of LPT Realty, we offer cutting-edge tools and marketing strategies to ensure your success. Legacy Realty of Iowa, your trusted partner for buying or selling in Central Iowa. All right, we're going to talk some tenants here in a little bit. But right now, my first guest is a realtor with Legacy Realty, and she's been a frequent guest of mine. She is Rhonda Dix. Rhonda, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Hey, you bet. Well, I do have a couple of timely questions for you. It appears that this longest government shutdown in U.S. history is coming to an end. And I was just wondering, you know, did the shutdown over the last several weeks, you know, did that have any effect on the real estate industry at all?
Yes, believe it or not. Not personally any of my buyers or sellers, but in just conversations, several of the government loan programs, there's not anybody to verify some of those programs. So I know people are having to switch types of loans that they're doing, or it's delaying closings even. So yeah, I mean, it hasn't been fun for most. Some people have that flexibility and other people just have to table their purchase. And we're seeing some people canceling their purchase agreements as a result. So yeah, it's unfortunate.
Well, it seems like it affects everything anymore.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Well, I've also seen some stats recently where the average age of a first-time home buyer is now about 40 years old, whereas it used to be 30 or even, you know, the late 20s. You know, from your own personal experience, you know, with your clients, is that what you're seeing too?
It is crazy. National Association of Realtors just released their buyer seller profile report here this last week. And the average age for a first-time home buyer is age 40. With the cost of living and so many other things, it's just pricing a lot of those younger buyers out of our marketplace. They also said that the average income for that first-time home buyer is $97,000 a year. So anyway, they said we're at the lowest percentage of first-time home buyers since the 1980s.
Wow.
Which is pretty significant. And we were down 21% from last year from first-time home buyers.
Wow. Now, I've also seen where our president and his team are floating the idea of offering 50-year mortgages to home buyers in addition, you know, to the usual 30-year mortgages. And I have my own thoughts on maybe what that will mean for people. But you're the expert, so I'll let you take a stab at that. But, you know, I understand the motivation for doing that is to reduce your monthly cost. But obviously, you know, in the long run, you're going to pay a lot more, aren't you?
You truly are. I know they want to get a few more buyers into the marketplace and, you know, maybe spreading it out over a longer period of time will relieve some of those expenses. I mean, obviously, we're battling expenses everywhere, whether it's at the gas pump, grocery stores, just everything. But again, it's nothing's free. I mean, whether you spread it out, it's just going to incur more interest. So you're really not making a big dent on the principal of the loan, and you're going to end up paying quite a bit more for that home.
When you were telling me off air that a lot of people are even looking at 15-year loans right now because they probably want to get paid off sooner, don't they?
Yeah. And again, back to that report, you know, just because they said first-time home buyers are down, they said the amount of cash buyers that are in our marketplace is up. Last year, as well as this year, 26% of all home buyers paid cash. They were able to tap that equity in their properties, and people are staying in their homes longer. Another statistic, again, out of that same report was people are staying on average 11 years in their current property, which used to be anywhere between 5 and 7 years before they were considering a move up. So again, staying in that home, you're accruing a little bit more equity. They're tapping that, they're using that. But also some of those buyers, or actually sellers, they're loaning money to their kids. During the pandemic, a lot of kids moved back home with their families, lived in basements. And now some of those parents are trying to get those people out of their basements and helping them into home ownership. So that's interesting as well.
Well, I told you off air too that my son actually moved back home this year. So yeah, if anybody has any thoughts on how I can get him back out of my house, I would take any kind of.
On TV recently, there was a term for, and they said it was a lot of young men, and they're in their 30s moving home. And the trade-off is they're doing some of the home maintenance for those parents. And then also there's a new trend where some of the parents are renting and living in the basements of some of their children because they want to travel a little bit more, but they want a place to land too. So it's sure. Kind of a role reversal. So some interesting things happening in the marketplace.
Oh, I bet. Well, is there any specific properties you want to talk about tonight?
Well, right now, like I said, we're planning for spring. I know that's just right around the corner, it seems like. With the holidays, planning goes into new construction. So we're getting basements ready to go in and, you know, catching some of this last minute nice weather. But we do have a market home still available in Centennial Estates. It's a beautiful two-story home that offers four bedrooms with the potential of a fifth. Like, again, we're using that kind of as a landing spot, but it is for sale. That two-story home is $549,000 and really has a lot of great amenities. It's got a main floor office. In addition to the upper level bedrooms that are together, flexibility in the lower level to add that fifth bedroom down there with another bathroom family room. So anyway, it's open on Sunday if anybody wants to stop out any weekend, typically 1 to 3, and usually myself or Tiffany Rummelhart are there to host.
All right. If anybody has any questions for you, I usually ask this, what's your phone number? How can I get a hold of you?
Certainly. My phone number, 515-975-3735, or you can find me at RhondaDixRealEstate.com.
Well, hey, Rhonda, thanks a lot for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. All right, listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Legacy Realty of Iowa and Vive Dermatology Clinic and Spa. Revive opened in 2017, is located on the south side of Ankeny near Hy-Vee. They provide top-tier aesthetic procedures as well as dermatology. You can usually get a dermatology appointment the same day. Revive offers Botox, fillers, lasers, medical-grade skincare, weight loss injections, and cool sculpting. Revive loves Ankeny and is very supportive of this community. You can give them a call at 515-965-5677. Well, my other guest tonight is a former Ankeny tennis star who was named to Ankeny Fanatics all-time Ankeny boys tennis team in 2020. And he has been a USPTA elite pro since 1987, working at clubs in Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, Arizona, Virginia, Florida, and Hawaii. From 1990 to 2014, he lived in Japan, where he worked in sports ministry. And since 2015, he has been the head boys tennis coach at Des Moines Roosevelt. He is Dan Pitts. Dan, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
Thanks.
Well, hey, I'm sure some of our listeners are probably wondering, you know, why we're going to be talking about tennis in the middle of November. But I know you conducted a fall league in the Des Moines area this fall that just wrapped up last month. And this is something that I wanted to hear more about. So let's dive into that a little bit. So was this the first year that you've done this? And what inspired you to form the league?
Actually, Tammy Luton, the former coach of Ankeny Centennial, she kind of had a fall league. It wasn't really that well organized, but it was fun. We would just go to different schools, have a different school each time for about, you know, 5-6 weeks. Yeah, so we did that. I would come up to Ankeny with our Roosevelt guys and play. And then, you know, as we all know, she passed away.
Right.
So I thought, you know, I really liked it and it was fun. So last year I decided to spearhead it. I kind of decided to, with the schools that we had, to go to each school each week. So we played on just Wednesday. And so, we had like 5-6 schools that were involved. And so we would go to their schools, for a couple hours, after school from 4:30 to 7 or so. And it worked out really well. And we had a good participation and, it was kind of challenging compared to before when Tammy was running it, because I decided to just do it all at one place at one time. So therefore, I had various schools playing against each other on the same courts at the same time. So this year, however, with the girls switching to the fall, it was a little more of a challenge because I knew the girls were using the courts, you know, at all the different places. and high schools. And so I was thinking to myself, where should we play that the girls don't play? And I thought, oh gosh, we could go to Johnston Middle School, where my dad taught for 25 years, and he actually taught like right next to the tennis courts. Of course, back then they might not have been there, but anyway. And I was pretty sure that they weren't using those courts, since they, you know, Johnston has the high school courts that
right.
the girls were at. So yeah, we got the okay from the Johnston coach. And we made it a go. We started September 3rd, and we've had about 10 teams from the metro area. We had, of course, Roosevelt and Johnston and Ankeny Centennial and Valley and Ames, Boone, North Polk, and Urbandale, and so it's about the main teams there. Oh, DC, how can I forget DCG?
Okay.
Because they're the ones that actually won the last tournament and had the most wins throughout the season. So it worked out really good. I mean, it was a challenge to schedule all the matches and keep it flowing on 8 courts with, you know, 50 some guys. So I decided to, you know, just do like mini set matches to, you know, instead of, you know, a tennis match is usually the best 2 out of 3
sure.
sets. And sometimes we could do an 8-game pro set when we moved to Johnston High School after the group stopped. But in September, we played at the middle school and just played a set match. So, we just go to 6 games, and then if it's 5 all, we just play the tiebreaker then, because I just, you know, I didn't want guys waiting around all the time.
Sure.
And wanted to keep them rotating. And it was a lot of fun. And some people would think, gosh, that doesn't sound like fun to me. But
yeah. Well, I know you told me earlier that it was close to 100 players that played at times. Not all at once, of course, but that's a pretty good participation number. Do you find with the boys that it helps to have something organized like that to keep them playing in the off season? Whereas if you don't have that, you know, and maybe some kids don't have the opportunity to play like at a club or something, that this is an opportunity, a way for them to, you know, keep their game in shape?
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of geared more towards the average high school player. You know, the elite players, you know, they play at the clubs and they practice. We did have actually a few elite guys that played. Not every week, but anyway. For sure. I mean, I had 10 guys on our team that participated, and they wouldn't have played tennis if I didn't have it that day. I'm pretty, almost 100% sure.
And I suppose some of the players maybe do other sports in the fall too, so maybe it's kind of hard to get them to come out and play. I don't know.
Well, that's the point. It was mostly geared for the guys that do not do a fall sport. So my number one player, who's an incoming freshman, he runs cross country. And he couldn't participate in September, but towards the end, it was like, you know, there's a couple guys there that would be really good competition for you and it'd be fun. And I knew he wasn't like a starter on the cross-country team or anything. Mm-hmm. So I asked him and his father if he'd be willing to come out for a few Wednesdays. And I guess he must have asked his coach, because he was there for the last 3 Wednesdays. So it's kind of cool.
Well, then you told me earlier that when the girls' season ended, then you guys ended up playing your final tournament here in Ankeny, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, because Johnston is just a better location somewhat, just the logistics of just, I don't know what it was, but I just decided Johnston was a little better fit. But then for the tournament, you guys got 16 courts here, and for a tournament, that is a lot better than 10 or 8 courts. And so it was pretty cool. Actually, it was really cool because it was very cold that day. It seems like every time I come to Ankeny, it's cold weather for tennis anyway. So, but we had the courts filled. I mean, we had 56 guys out there playing all at once, every court full, and mostly doubles. Mm-hmm. So do the math. I mean, it was a fun day. You know, it was cold.
You mentioned the cold weather, but in general, this fall, the weather was pretty decent. I mean, overall, didn't you have some pretty good weather?
Yes. That's the beauty. That's where the girls switched to the fall. Mm-hmm. I mean, the spring is, it seems like it's, I don't know, when I was playing, in, you know, back in the day, it didn't seem like it was that cold.
Yeah.
It almost seems like the global warming doesn't, is like, I don't know, spring is getting colder, but the fall is getting nicer.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree with you, because when I played, I don't remember it being like that. But when I go out now in the spring to cover some of these matches, even if I just stay for 15, 20 minutes and take a few photos, yeah, it can be brutal out there.
Yeah, that's spring tennis in Iowa.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you plan to do this again then next year, since it went so well?
Yeah. I plan to do it every year. It's, it's just a fun thing to do. I mean, I'm not getting paid or anything like that, but, you know, there's lots of things that I would like to do to help out with the community and for high school tennis. And that's what I do, you know?
Yeah, sure. Well, let's talk about your history as a player a little bit. You were Ankeny's first state place winner in 1979 when you took third in Class 2A singles. In 2020, you were named the number 2 singles player on our Ankeny Fanatic all-time team. Because at that time, your third place finish still stood as the highest finish ever by a player from Ankeny. And the only reason, of course, that you weren't our number 1 player was because Will Blevins of Ankeny Centennial was going into his senior year at the time. And he had already placed 5th and 4th in his first 2 seasons in high school. And then, of course, his junior season was wiped out due to the COVID-19 pandemic. But it seemed inevitable that he would earn a top 2 or 3 finish in his senior year. And he did go on to earn a runner-up finish. One of his teammates at the time, Caleb Peterson, also went on to earn runner-up honors a couple of years later. You know, but still pretty impressive that it took more than 4 decades for anyone to surpass what you accomplished. So you got to be pretty proud of him.
Well, lucky, I would say. With Ankeny and the population booming and everything like that, I was quite shocked that when I heard that. Tell me the truth.
Well, I'm sure you played with some of the same guys, you know, that I did back in the day. Jay Fifield was behind you, but he was ahead of me. I'm sure you played a lot with Jay over the years, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Jay and I, it was really fun to play in all the time. Yeah. And when I came back from Japan on vacations, I would get together with them and hit. And we had an epic match. I think I beat him 7-6, 7-6, like maybe 6 years ago or something.
Uh-huh. So, what do you still play pretty competitively?
Yeah. I actually play today. I played my assistant, even though I've got one knee that replaced from last November, and I've got another one that's going to be replaced next month. I can't move like I used to, that's for sure. But I can still play, and it's still fun. And now, I'm planning on, I took last summer and this summer off because of my knees, bad knees, but I'm planning on playing next year. I usually do the Des Moines Ladder, and so I've been active with that. And I also play with the USTA League teams. So, planning to do that again. And we'll see how it goes. Yeah.
I'm jealous that you got to get out there and exercise today, because I had to have a procedure done last week. It wasn't a big deal, but I had to have a little bit of a skin cut out of my leg for some skin cancer issues. And I'm not supposed to do anything for like 3 or 4 weeks, and it's killing me. But it didn't hurt. But just, I do have some stitches that will come out later this week. And then they say they don't want you to do anything for a while to, So one of those things. But. Well, obviously, when you played it as a young kid, I mean, you must have fell in love with the sport of tennis. You've been playing your whole life, and you coach kids. What is it about the sport that you think appealed to you when you were younger and that has maintained your love?
Yeah, such a really good question. You know, I was always into sports. I played the main ones, basketball, football, baseball, really into baseball. I collected all 3 of those sports cards. I was kind of a nerd, back in the day. I really liked statistics and that kind of stuff. It's just a great sport. I mean, when I first started playing, it was challenging, but I thought, what motivated me is that I was only like middle of the road with my ability, with all my, you know, good athletic friends in Ankeny. You know, there's so many stars of good players with different sports here in Ankeny. And I was just thinking, you know, what could I do to excel at? And so when I started, I was like, okay, this is the sport I can excel at, because I know that my athletic ability might not be quite as good to excel in other sports, but if I really work hard at it, I can excel at this sport. So sure enough, that's kind of what happened.
I know when I did the article on the all-time team, our former coach, Randy Ratcliffe, told me that you were better in singles than doubles. Your strong suit was that you had a baseline ground stroke with topspin that was phenomenal. Did you still have that?
Yeah, and I'm still better at singles than doubles. But you know, as I get older, doubles is going to probably be the game.
Right.
But there's a lot of things that the kind of a baseliner type, you know, can do well in doubles as well. And my volleys has gotten better through the years as I was a tennis teaching pro for, you know, so many years. Don't actually teach actively right now, except for coaching. But I plan on, when I retire from the Postal Service, it's a pandemic job, by the way. I started 5 years ago, you know, mailing in. When I retire in a couple of years, I plan to go back into not full-time teaching, but I will probably do some.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've covered a lot of, you know, tennis players over the years, and it seems like a lot of the really good singles tennis players do prefer that over doubles, or they're just better in it, and maybe they just don't focus on the doubles as much. But with you, did you just like it better, or did you just feel like you had more of a knack for it?
Oh, yeah. My volley was not very good. I mean, I just patterned my game off of the baseliners in the day, Bjorn Borg and Jim Ovilas, those guys. And in a way, I started hitting the ball with topspin before it became popular.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys were my models. And that's how the game evolved. I mean, you look at Roger Federer's forehand, it looks exactly like Bjorn Borg's forehand. I mean, it really has evolved in that way. And so now you see guys not coming up to the net. You look at the Wimbledon grass. Back in the day, back in the 70s and 80s, the grass court would be like a tee. It would be, you know, worn out in the service line, and then it would be like a path going up to the net, and then be worn out in the net at the end. Now, it's only worn out at the baseline. Now, there's no wear and tear at the net, because guys just play from the baseline now.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, as a teaching pro, I taught myself how to hit good volleys, so I can do that now. So it's fun to play doubles because I'm better at it now than I used to be. I actually think I had a losing record in doubles in high school.
Oh, really?
It could have been the partners that I played with. But anyway, yeah.
Well, your career sounds a little bit like mine. Yeah, I think I preferred singles over doubles. I could not hit the ball at the net well at all. But did have some good doubles partners that carried me a little bit. But another thing that I liked about tennis, because my other sport was basketball. You know, in some of those other sports, you know, in high school, you know, whether it's basketball, football, maybe baseball, you know, some of those coaches can be pretty intense. The thing I liked about tennis was that it was just, you know, it was less intense. It was more for fun. I mean, it's still competitive, but it's just one of those sports that you can go out and enjoy. Obviously something you can do your whole life.
You tell that to some of my Roosevelt players and they disagree with you. Yeah, coach. No, I try to keep a good perspective. It is a fun sport too. I think maybe for the first time, though, I have my now incoming freshman is kind of like me. You know, he's really into tennis.
Well, good.
So I think I'm going to bond with him a little more than some of these other guys I've been teaching, but our coaching. But anyway, it's a lot of fun.
Well, now we talked a little bit about, you know, with the girls' season switching to the fall. Of course, when they were both in the same season, I imagine it's pretty hard for any one coach to coach both the boys and the girls. I don't know if there were very many that did that. But now, obviously, somebody like you, you know, you could coach both the boys and the girls since the seasons aren't at the same time. Is that something you'd consider doing?
No.
No. Just going to stick with the boys, huh?
Yeah. I think, yeah, for various reasons. Yeah. but yeah, I know my former teammate at Iowa State, Mike Conlin, now is the coach for both. And he was kind of pulled into the job before last year. And it was very difficult, obviously, because, you know, the girls play in opposite place in the boys' day. So right. It's almost virtually impossible to be the coach. But somehow he used assistance and was able to do it. Now he can do both easily. Yeah. And so it's kind of cool.
And which school is he at?
Valley.
Oh, Valley. Okay.
Yeah. And he came out almost every week to, not every week, but more towards the end, he was coming out almost, you know, watching the Wednesday play. And, you know, it's fun to catch up with them. And, yeah, he's a very good coach.
Well, just a couple other things I wanted to ask you about. You talked a little bit about the Groundstrokes and Bjorn Borg and some of the greats that you watched. You know, we just kind of got through this golden age of tennis, you know, where we had Federer and Nadal and Djokovic. And I know Djokovic is still playing a little bit, but, you know, I wondered what the state of the pro game would be after those guys were all done playing. But boy, with Alcaraz and Sinner, it's still pretty interesting to follow, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm kind of weird because I timetable the tournaments, you know, and then I watch them at my leisure. So I don't get on social media or any news things to find out who wins. So I actually don't even know who won the U.S. Open yet because I'm still watching it.
Oh, really? Okay.
I know I'm weird that way, but it's one of the things you can do in the 21st century, I guess.
That's right. That's right. Well, I won't spoil that for you. I'm not sure I can remember who won it, but I know those guys have met in the last hour, however many finals. But
they're quite good.
I know the first time I saw Alcaraz play on TV when he was 21, 22 or whatever, I just, how's anybody going to ever beat this guy? I mean, he just can cover so much court. And
those guys are fun.
They're fun to watch. But.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, the two boys that passed me up on the all-time list. I mean, you know, I mean, maybe it's the rackets, maybe it's the conditioning, maybe it's the, you know, the way that guys are getting bigger and stronger naturally. But, you know, I look at them and it's like, man, I don't know if I could have competed with those guys.
Yeah.
But you know, it's funny how that comparison game works, you know, everyone. And so, like Rod Laver, he was one of the best players of all time. Well, you know, probably he couldn't even beat a middle of the road, a woman player right now. I mean, you know, back in his day. I mean, right. It's evolved so much and gotten so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. Some of the shots that these guys hit.
I thought I hit the ball pretty hard back in the day, but yeah, I see those guys play.
Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I'd be 6-0 against those guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was I became a missionary, went to Japan, and I, before I did that, I went to Europe, and I toured with the accompanied the chaplain of the pro tour up to Wimbledon and England, British tournaments up there, and so I actually hit with some of these guys.
Oh, wow.
that played in tournaments. Actually, I know Ben Shelton's dad, Brian.
Oh, okay.
We went to a Billy Graham concert together. And you know, I've hit with these guys and it was, you know, I kept up with them, but I mean, it's a different level. I mean, it really is.
I can imagine. Yeah. Well, yeah, you mentioned your ministry in Japan. So you spent 25 years over there. I think that's kind of interesting too. I mean, what did you love most about Japan?
Oh gosh. Yeah. I really like the challenge of speaking another language and, just how much you can impact people, just in so many ways. You know, I was a wedding preacher. I performed like almost 4,000 weddings.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, each wedding, you know, I'm sharing the gospel into how many people, and it's kind of cool. And then my English classes were fun too, because you know, I can really personally, you know, talk and get to know my students and help them become better English speakers, but also to know God and the Bible better. And it's great. I love Japan. There's so many good things about it, and my kids are still there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So to go back.
Yeah, I do. And they come here, and it's pretty cool. They're in there. My son just turned 31. My daughter just turned 28. So, yeah, they're firmly established. But my daughter just married a British man.
Oh, wow.
So she could be moving onward, who knows, to someplace else.
Well, I know there's been some great tennis players that have come out of Japan. Is the sport pretty big over there?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the reasons why I went in the first place, because tennis is big in Japan. So I knew that I could, teach at a club, which I did, before I did some other ministries there. But it's really popular.
Oh, wow.
And probably more popular than it is in America, just by the court usage. People using the courts more than they do in America. In America, you see vacant courts, and Japan, there's hardly ever vacant courts.
Well, it does seem like in the U.S., just when we look at the number of elite players and the ones that have won the majors, there's just been a huge drought of that. That kind of tells you right there that maybe the level isn't where it used to be. But
well, I don't think it's so much the level. I think it's just because the level of other countries, the emphasis on other countries, has gotten higher than America. And a lot of the elite athletes are doing other sports too. We have some really good players right now in America. Mm-hmm. I just told you Ben Sheldon. He's one of them. He's a great player. So, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to ask you about as far as Ankeny's history with tennis, when I was looking through that stuff today, of course, the biggest team highlight for Ankeny was back in 2003 when Dennis Hopeful led the team to the team title. And, of course, that was before you came back and started coaching Roosevelt. So your past probably never crossed with Dennis, did it?
No, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I go to his tournament every year for the high school.
Yeah.
We were invited there. So, I was instrumental of getting invited there because we weren't invited before I was coached. So, I wish I would have known.
Yeah, he had some great years here. Still kind of hard to believe that he's been gone now almost 15 years. And he had some great teams. They're fun to watch. And he was always a good guy to deal with. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I miss him. But I just thought I'd ask if you happened to run into him back in the day or not. But hey, Dan, I really appreciate you coming in tonight. I enjoyed the conversation. Thanks a lot for your time.
Yeah. Arigato gozaimasu. Thank you.
You bet. Right, you're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Legacy Realty of Iowa. When you work at Legacy Realty, you're not just getting one of the largest and most trusted real estate agencies in Ankeny, you're partnering with over 75 expert agents who are committed to your success. Whether you're searching for your dream home or selling your property for the best possible price, we offer the right tools, strategies, and support to help get you there. As part of LPT Realty, a national leader in the real estate industry, we combine local expertise with innovative resources to give you an unbeatable advantage. Choose us for unparalleled service, proven results, and a commitment to your success in every transaction. Legacy Realty of Iowa, where your real estate goals become a reality. Well, I want to thank my guests again for coming in tonight. We had Realtor Rhonda Dix, and then we had Roosevelt Boys Tennis Coach Dan Pitts. I really appreciate their time tonight. I'd hope to do a preview of the girls' state swimming meet, but it was kind of a short week with the state meet coming up on Thursday and Friday, and we just weren't able to work it out. I know Coach Dustin Rhodes is doing double duty this week with the boys having started their practices as well, so I really didn't want to inconvenience him, but we weren't able to work out to get anybody here to talk about that. But I did want to just do a brief breakdown of the meet coming up here on Thursday and Friday. I'm going to be heading over there on Thursday for the preliminaries, and hopefully the diving event as well. I do have to come back on Thursday night. I've got an appointment that night as well as one on Friday morning that I need to be here for. So I may not go back on Friday for the finals. But anyway, just wanted to talk a little bit about the state meet. Of course, Ankeny qualified in every event except for the breaststroke. So I know their big goal is probably to get a top 10 finish overall. That's going to be a tough one to do, though, I think. They're going to have to really maybe overperform in some events to score enough points to do that, but we'll see how they do. Ankeny is seeded 9th in the medley relay. They're 12th in the 200 freestyle relay, and they're 16th in the 400 freestyle relay. So they should have a good chance to score points in all three of those events. In the individual events, Charlie Vilhauer is the team's top qualifier. She is seated 9th in the butterfly and 18th in the 100 freestyle. Maggie Blackmore is seated 13th in the 500 freestyle. Avery Anderson is 19th in that event. So they certainly have a chance to score some points in those events as well. And that's not to discount their chances to score in other events, but they are going to have to swim quite a bit above their seeds in order to do that. So we'll see if they can do that. In the team race, I know Dowling, Waukee Northwest, as well as Cedar Falls have been the top teams all season. I would imagine those are the three teams that will be battling it out for the team title. I really haven't done a deep dive as far as who all qualified from those teams, though, to see how the team race might shake out. I guess we'll just have to see how it unfolds on Thursday and Friday, but it should be a fun meet. And like I said, I'll be over there on Thursday. We'll certainly have coverage from both days at AnkenyFanatic.com. And come back next week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast.